Welcome to KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Since Cheryl Strayed walked the Pacific Crest Trail, there's been a best-selling book, a Hollywood movie, and now she gives advice to other lost souls. She's going to be our guest in about 20 minutes. Now, Cheryl Strayed is in a creative field. Her job is not going away, but let's travel to the future now and step into a different kind of job site. Let us say the fish and chips joint of the future. Okay, inside, the manager is planning her next promotion. She's thinking about who's coming in to the fish and chips joint, what they want to eat, and she's doing this using big data. Data plans a menu. Data even says what music to play. The restaurant industry is just one workforce that will be transformed by artificial intelligence. How do we prepare for that future? My next guests are Rob Gerling, who runs a Seattle company called Artifact Group, specializing in human-centered design. Cesar Keller is the founder and CEO of the tech startup Workplace 21. He's an investor who studies the future of work and education. So, the restaurant industry, that's where a lot of people have their first jobs. So I asked Cesar, what will artificial intelligence do to those restaurant jobs?
So let me give a very simple example that is super important for a restaurant owner, for example. It's super hard to plan today, like who you're going to hire, right? Like to come, for example, to wait on tables, right? So if you use that technology and you know the demographics, and at the same time you have a professional profile, like as part of different apps and different solutions, what you can do is just like a simple match to say like, who is the ideal wait profile to actually help your customers every time of the day.
So fewer jobs, because the idea for the restaurant operator is not to waste their labor costs, right?
Not necessarily fewer jobs on that example. And that's one that I like a lot, the future, because that's not about job elimination necessarily, but actually have a better match of the right professional to your business. So for example, you say like if early in the day you have an older demographic, you can have like also a profession that has like a good profile to actually wait on those tables and engage in good conversations and entertain more the table. If you have like a business hour and people like a super fast and want to go, so you can also have that same demographic, right? Like, so good examples of how to better deploy these profiles of employees to the business.
Rob, when you hear about the restaurant of the future, what are you hearing?
I think if you look at the small family restaurant, there's kind of one set of scenarios. If you think about the big franchises, the big Burger Kings and whatnot, there's incredible pressure on them to optimize the performance of the humans. And that's where I'm a little worried that the sort of quantification of everything, like people will be studied by the systems and the systems will try to optimize their performance.
What about that worries you?
Well, it's a little bit like imagine being told what to do by a sort of disembodied voice that is in fact the AI system that is managing the restaurant. That's not that far-fetched.
But what if the disembodied voice is smarter than the boss's voice that used to tell you what
right.
to do?
Right, and a little bit omnipotent, right? It's sort of connected to all of the sensors in the restaurant. It's connected to, it's watching all the performance of all of the individuals, and it's ranking their performances. It's constantly evaluating and trying to optimize their performance. And I just sense that where we're going, if you go down that road just a little way, conceptually what you get to is essentially becoming a robot yourself, like all the humanity taken out of any kind of, particularly in a fast food restaurant where essentially they're just trying to eliminate errors. They're optimizing for the, you know, thousandth of a second in terms of performance. They're not really so concerned about the community engagement or the sort of, you know.
So you're just not talking about people being replaced by robots, but they're still people, but they're behaving as if they might as well be robots.
Exactly. And then it just becomes a question of time before they are actually displaced by robots because, you know, robots are tireless. They don't show up for work late. They can work 24/7 and not need a break and all of those things. So what worries me there is just this sort of steady optimization of the workforce. We're all going to be sort of quantified and scored and ranked, and that will become a part of a profile that's out there in the world that gets you a job. And if you're not a good performer, somehow that's going to, you know, count against you.
And, okay. I want to talk about the robot workforce. I just, Caesar, any reaction to that flip side way of looking at the restaurant and jobs of the future?
Absolutely. I love Rob's perspective because it's so true. One aspect that I love about that conversation is to say probably flipping burgers is not the dream job of, like, anyone. Like, you do it because you need a paycheck. You need to pay your studies, right? You know, that's why you do. So when you look at historically how technology has been actually eliminating jobs, this is not new news, right? Like, technology has been eliminating jobs like factory jobs, coal miners, right? Like, you name it. Like,
yes.
So the jobs that actually technology tends to eliminate are the jobs that not necessarily you miss the job itself. You might miss the paycheck. So what actually tell us is in this new wave of technology is we can actually look at the future and see a future where the kind of jobs that will be there will be actually using better our human capabilities. We can maybe think on an augmented human being with more technology. And actually what's hard to manage is the transition from where we are now to that future, because that has been in every single industrial revolution in the past. So it's not about the future. Future is always better because technology makes our lives better. The problem is how do we transition when you have like such an intense wave of technologies.
Rob, we've had industrial revolutions before, as Caesar says. They've created lots of new jobs, arguably better jobs. How do you look at that transition?
We should be excited about new technologies that are going to take away the drudgery. But actually, I think people are really fearful. I think the perception is that my economic livelihood, my autonomy, my sort of meaning as a human, and my identity as in my job is a very important part of an essential part of living in a modern society. And if you are threatening me with displacement by a robot or an AI algorithm or a machine learning system, I'm fearful of that. And I, of course, want to reject it.
You're personally fearful, or you're fearful how people are going to a backlash when people's identities are threatened?
I do feel there will be a backlash. I really think we're, unfortunately, on a track where our kind of economic and political system, socioeconomic political system, is not going to adapt quickly or easily to a hugely automated workforce. And as a sort of increasing number of people are sidelined and made essentially unemployable, we're going to face not just a reskilling and educational challenge to do with keeping those people relevant, but really end up with huge portions of society that potentially have no ability to be hired or no social or economic value to our system. So I'm really worried that at some point if we don't manage this transition well, we will end up in a place with real social upheaval. And I think that's the biggest fear. And I hate to sort of pile on to the fears that we all have, because I think there's enough existential fear in our daily lives anyway. But I actually think this is perhaps one of those areas that's people are almost in denial about what's not that far away in terms of change.
You did mention education, and I want to talk about that. That's something that at least we can do something about. And Caesar, you focus a lot on education. How does education, school, need to change?
So that's a big point. And to Rob's point, the future is going to be all about the choices we make today. So it's all about how do we as a society actually face it and actually rule what you want to do with technology and how to deploy them, right? Because one part of this fourth industrial revolution we are going through is the time period. Because like if you look at the first and the second industrial revolutions, they took place in 100 years time frame. The third one, it was like 55 years. This fourth one, like the most conservative projections actually talking about 25 years, top to be full deployed. So what's going to actually happen, to Rob's point?
To have artificial intelligence and big data integrated in virtually every workplace in America.
In everywhere, in every business. Yeah. So when you look at like how this wave will get like a lot of this generation not prepared for their workplace, this is real, right? This is true. So what we need to, it's actually have like a big like discussion and actually make the right choices in terms of how do you actually use all this wealth that will be generated. We talked the restaurant on the beginning. So that restaurant is going to be like way more profitable. And if you apply that for every business, you see like there's a lot of wealth.
Where is there a model of how the education system changes?
So coming back to that, it's super clear that so jobs that has a lower education level will be eliminated. What this industrial revolution is taking us, that's to me is like super interesting, is we have like a lot of more of the what we call the gig economy, jobs paid by hours, and one area that jobs has been growing and will keep growing is what I'm calling caring jobs. So care in terms of like social care, health care, beauty care, like every time there's human touch, there's a lot of that on the gig economy. Like this will actually push us to be probably better humans and take care of each other more. And on the other end of the scale, you have like highly educated jobs, right? So basically, it's, we talk about mode skills. So it's no longer enough to be a lawyer, but you have to be a lawyer that understand computer systems, right? This is a way like crossing points when you're going to do. So what you can do with education, and this is super important, is invest part of that wealth on creating social equity through education. So it's reskilling and upskilling people as fast as possible to actually grab those better jobs, right? Like those more intellectual jobs. We understand that we need to actually revisit like how we see education from like preschool to continuous education in the future to prepare our kids in our like workforce displaced to engage on this work.
You were telling us that Finland doesn't separate education out subject by subject.
That's right. They just actually changed that curricula like in all fundamental school, because actually if you look at the future and you say we are actually going through the information era. So like information is not the key on the schools anymore. What you need is to be sure that we are preparing our kids to actually understand what to do with that information, how to connect that, how to make a good analysis, how to actually understand if a source is reliable or not. So you don't need subjects for that. What we need is actually critical thinking. You need to have cooperation.
I just want to make it clear. There's social studies, and there's history, and there's art, and there's physics, and there's subject by subject. And you're saying Finland just, everything is interdisciplinary?
It is, because you actually propose, or you actually get the students, for example, right? This is one example. You say, let's solve a problem. And they choose a problem to solve. That might be like how to actually have more water in Africa, right? Like you can be anyone. And then what you do, you apply every single, what we call the old subjects, right? You say like, what's the math involved on that? Like how, what's the financial, what's statistics, what?
Psychology, the geography, yeah.
Right, you get every single angle around that. And then you teach students, but with a purpose. Like this is super important.
And of course they're using the modern tools, because everybody is. It's not a separate discipline. Any reaction to modern education, the future of education, Rob?
Yeah, I mean, I think the challenge. Somebody said recently the machine learning revolution will be colorblind, and this idea that white collar, blue collar, or just low skilled jobs are the ones that are going to be displaced is actually another sort of myth. I think all jobs will face some amount of automation. It doesn't matter how sophisticated or how highly trained you are. It's going to show up right next to you, real soon.
In hospitals, in law firms, we're not just talking about
exactly in clinical scientific offices. And it doesn't matter the level of education, almost. So the human qualities, the human properties that, however, that will be the hardest to automate, the things that will sort of hold out the longest. And be resilient longer are in fact the I think sort of technical understanding, sort of an understanding of how these systems work, being proficient with data. That's sort of one area. A second area is creativity and the being having highly skilled people who are capable of asking really good questions and figuring out what are the questions to ask the systems is actually one of the sort of areas that we can find uniqueness. Machines are really good at answering questions, but they're not actually very good at coming up with them. And then the third area is all the sort of skills around social human relationships. That's negotiation, convincing, making arguments, comedy, all of the things that are kind of like the subtlety of humanity. Those three areas are the kind of areas where the sort of machines will have the hardest time displacing us. So if your job involves all three of those, you're going to be safe for a long time.
What job would involve all three of those?
That's a good question. So it's strange. I think nursing comes up quite a lot and occupational therapy and these kinds of therapists are sort of understood. But nursing particularly, because I think there's also an element in nursing, which is the sort of relationship you have with another human and how you empathize and communicate with that individual about pain and suffering and psychology and all of these things, as well as all of the physical things that are to do with treating them, which are actually quite sophisticated or complex physical manipulations. So nursing comes up. There's creativity in the work as well in terms of understanding really what people need versus what they're saying they need and sort of understanding what human psychology to a sort of different level. I'm a designer by training, and I think design actually has a little bit of the sort of creativity. Design thinking has been often bandied around as being a kind of new way of thinking about problem solving.
So, Cesar, part of that falls into what you called the caring industry, but more. So if you have a couple more questions. You're a kid or you've got a kid, being educated, what should that child study?
So first of all, you need to be sure that what you call the soft skills, they are developing those soft skills. Because like if you think on like this future that Rob is describing here, there will be a lot of like how you relate to other human beings and how do you actually create like collective intelligence. So things like cooperation, empathy, you need to be sure that your kids actually are masters on all those social skills. This is super important. The second one is understand if those kids have academic potential, right? Like to actually keep studying. Because one of the quotes that I love about the future is to say, people will be either telling computers what to do or being told by computers what to do. Mm-hmm. So that's either way, in the middle, there's not a lot. So those jobs are gonna tend to disappear. So if you wanna actually go on the academic way, you need to be multi-skilled, you need to go deep, and you need to actually keep developing intellectually as much as you can. And if you allow me like one segue to that thought that I love is to say, when I was in high school, and I was planning which profession I would actually pick. I picked engineering. I actually knew that I would actually choose a profession. I would like go to the university, I would learn, I would be an intern, and I would actually work for 30 years and I would retire happily like after that.
Yeah.
That would be like a 35, 40 year cycle, right? If you actually look at how we are today, especially on technical professions, you need to be completely reskilled in 5 years. Because if you are not, you're completely out of your profession.
So plan to constantly train.
Train. So if you project how actually technology is going fast in the future, that cycle, on my view, that's the projection, is to say it will be job by job, project by project. So basically, you need to be reskilled and upskilled for every job you actually will do. And once you finish, you need to be reskilled and upskilled again for the next one.
Okay.
So that education, the basis, like for the kids today, right? Like if you're a parent, is to actually make kids love learning and have like the growth mindset that we have been discussing a lot here in Seattle, because actually that's going to be the key. We have to be like loving to learn and relearn our professions every day.
You know, not everybody wants to be creative and deal with mystery. I mean, what are we going to do with people whose jobs and skills get eliminated and they don't see a path for themselves? Rob mentioned, you know, social upheaval. Do you have any quick thought on that?
That would be a forcing function for us to actually rethink our careers and understand like how we can actually progress and be productive. But that would be a big push. Like I would add to that list one that the World Economic Forum like are actually adding is like office jobs. That's a big number. Office jobs that have like low decision making, right? Like all repetitive tasks that we do, like those are going as fast as like they have a number. They have like 5 million jobs before 2020. That's like right there, right? Like in 2 years. So we'll actually have to find our new passions. So
it's new passions.
New passions, because if you look at that future, now let's not talk about the next 10, 20 years, that's going to be really tough. But if you look at the future, the main reason that we're going to actually get engaged on working is because we have a purpose. We have something that we want to accomplish. We want to solve a problem. So it's not really about the paycheck anymore necessarily. That's part of the big discussion that we have to have now. But to say, how do actually got the will to develop something that is going to be better for humankind.
We've been talking about today and the future with Rob Gerling, CEO of Artifact Group, a Seattle design and innovation consultancy, specializes in human-centered design and ideation. Cesar Keller, former chief marketing officer for Microsoft Latin America. He has founded a tech startup called Workplace 21. He's the CEO there, an investor in the future of work and education. Please come back and update us. Thank you both.
Thank you, Bill.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
And if you want to hear more about how artificial intelligence and automation are changing our workforce, Rob Gerling is moderating a panel conversation at Seattle University tonight. And Cesar Keller is one of the panelists. AI and Automation in the Workforce is tonight at 6:30 at Seattle University. You can get tickets at the door or through Town Hall Seattle. We'll be right back on KUOW's The Record with Cheryl Strayed. Stay tuned.